fact, the first oral interviews we did, we borrowed one from your program.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Cafferty was the guy running it then. I'm sure you've heard that name.
Yes.
Great guy. Okay, so my work there divided very neatly into two parts because there was a strategic change not quite halfway through. So the first, first 5 months, I was the chief engineer for the United Nations Protection Force. Then the Dayton Accord was signed, 21st of December, if I remember correctly. And I transferred, along with 10,000 other soldiers from UNPF, we took off our blue berets and put back on our national berets and put on our I-4 patches. I-4, do you know what that stands for?
International Stabilization Force?
Implementation Force. First it was the Implementation Force, then the Stabilization Force. So I-4 and then S-4. S-4 came in after the elections in the fall of 96. Right. So as chief engineer for the United Nations Protection Force, was providing the full range of military engineering services to the 34 nation conglomeration that was UNPF in Croatia and Bosnia, and there's a little bit in Macedonia. Then with the signing of the Dayton Accord and the entry of NATO into the theater, switched over and I became the deputy chief engineer to a wonderful British officer, then Brigadier John Moore Bick. So the same, you know, the same, broadly the same kind of work, the roads and bridges and clearing minefields. Of course, we weren't putting any minefields in, but I told you I needed everything I learned.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to learn how to put minefields in to get good at taking them out, because you know how a soldier thinks when they're putting them in. Even then, there are no guarantees. That's the dirtiest work in the world, is taking up somebody else's minefield, because you never know what booby traps or other things you're going to find. So in the first, essentially 5 months, my headquarters was in Zagreb with the UNPF headquarters. But it had become apparent to me, I guess I should mention, a few days after I got there, was a thing called Operation Storm.
Mm.
That's what the Croatians called it. Do you know about that?
Yes, that was the ethnic cleansing of the Serb Krajinas in southern Croatia, on the old border between Croatia and Bosnia.
Well, there were four UN sectors in Croatia: east, west, north, and south. East was up against the border with Serbia. West was kind of middling between Zagreb and the Serbian border. Then north and south were, the south was the Krajina. I'm not sure if the north was, it was contiguous to the south. I'm not sure if it was technically Krajina, but in any case, these were Serb enclaves in largely Croatia, it's not a surprise. And while there certainly was ethnic cleansing, that was in arguably a side effect.
Mm-hmm.
What it was the destruction of those enclaves and the seizure of that territory by the Croatian army and their helpers. So that changed the game quite a bit, and it very rapidly became apparent to me that the where we were needed was in Bosnia, not in Croatia. But UNPF headquarters, their view of Bosnia, it was kind of like in World War One, trying to run World War One from Paris, because Zagreb had been barely affected by the war. A few rockets had landed there, and there hadn't been any serious fighting, and it was fairly intact, functioning city. But Sarajevo was under siege. I mean, that's where the fight was. There was a big, you know, fault line ran all the way through Bosnia, where the fighting was still very active. And Zagreb was so out of touch. I mean, like Paris to the front lines of World War One, they had to put stamps on the messages to for them to get there. It was, they were really irrelevant. So I was determined to get to where the work was needed. It took me a couple of months to convince our commander, whose name I've conveniently forgotten, but whoever the commander of UNPF was then, a three-star French general. Very political. Just to give you an example, it was a, you know, we're hearing in the news today of a no-fly zone over Libya. And I guess there are NATO aircraft flying overhead, and if Gaddafi puts up an attack helicopter or a fighter jet, it's going to be on the ground very quickly soon thereafter. Well, in Zagreb, in the UNPF, in those days, the morning briefing to the commander that I always attended as his chief engineer would always start with a briefing by the J2 function. They had a different name for it there, because J2 classically is intelligence. Mm-hmm. But of course, the UN doesn't do intelligence, so it was information, I guess. And the briefer would start with a totally straight face and no hint of sarcasm, and say, "Good morning, General. Today we had the 1151st through the 1168th violation of the no-fly zone." It was a joke. And the bad guys didn't pay any attention to it. They knew the UN wasn't going to enforce it. So stuff like that. There were, you know, and it was really ludicrous. And then,
and when you say that the French general's actions were political, what effects did that have on your own operations? Was it?
I briefed him on occasion. He was generally annoyed with what I was doing. Thought I was too aggressive. His deputy. Hi, Mary.